Session number 12961, Rule 2.
Mr. Munn, Rule 2.
Yeah, in those days, we didn't know too much about luxuries and things like that. Probably if it was today, it'd be, you know, we would know and think that we was deprived of things. But we just lived a sort of simple life.
But was there any longing for the end of the war? Were people saying, oh, when is this war going to end? We can't stand this much longer.
No, I don't think they did, no. Because when you lost the loved one sort of thing, like your brothers and or brother, then it made you how many more of them was going to be killed before it was finished. Yeah.
Did you lose any family?
I lost a brother and cousins, yes.
How were they lost?
My brother, he was in the Ox and Bucks Light Infantry. And he was preparing for D-Day, and he was near home in Faversham in Kent, and he was out on the firing range, and the mortar bomb that he was firing exploded in the mortar, and he got killed.
And your cousins?
Well, they got killed in the Merchant Navy. I think it was on the Russian convoys, and they went. There's quite a few in our village got killed in the Merchant Navy.
Coming back to Gravesend,
yeah.
Was there any bombing of Gravesend apart from V weapons whilst you were there?
Well, yes. I mean, the daylight raids, and when they used to come over, they used to drop bombs around, yes.
What was your attitude towards being called up?
Well, we just took it that... that was our duty in those days, you know. We're just going to be, you know, go to war sort of thing.
So you're just philosophical?
Yeah, yeah. It's. I don't think anybody ever questioned, though, in the village, I think there was some conscientious objectors who didn't go. And then because we had the those who went down the mines, the Bevin boys, if you was one of them, a cousin of mine, he went into the mines, which he stayed in probably until his retirement.
Was that in the Kent coalfield?
No, I think it was in Wales. It could even be Nottingham up that way, or even Yorkshire, but he got called to go to be a Bevin boy.
Was there a possibility that you might become a Bevin boy?
Oh, no, I don't think, no, you didn't. It wasn't like that. I think you would just put down that you'd be a Bevin boy, and that was it.
So you volunteered for it?
No, I don't think you volunteered even, no. Your name just happened to come out the hat, I should think. I don't know how they done it. And you just went like anybody else who was getting called up into the army.
When you were called up, did you feel patriotic about it?
Oh, yes, I think you do. I mean... when you get into the forces, you know, you just take it. Yes, I think, yes, you are patriotic. You want to do what you can.
So So it must have been early in 1945 that you were called up.
Yes, January 45.
Can you tell me what was the procedure?
You went for a medical before that. I think I went in November or December for a medical. I went down to Chatham, and they used to hold the medicals at Burton's in Chatham, and then after you just hear that you know you got your calling up papers.
How were you treated at the medical?
All right, they give you a thorough medical, and that was it.
Did they find anything wrong with you?
No, I was A1.
Did you want to go into the Army, the Navy, or the Air Force?
I went into the Navy, into the Army. You could volunteer. It just all depends what your skills were, where you went, really. I mean, some went into the Navy, some went into the Air Force without volunteering for it.
But what was your own personal preference between the three?
I didn't mind. My brother went into the Army, so I went into the Army.
And then what was the next step after the medical?
Well, you got your calling up papers to where you got to report the barracks, which was in Scotland, Delroy in Ayrshire.
How did you get there?
By train. And because it was quite an experience, really, because we'd never really been out and travelled on your own on a train, you know, so far.
Was your fare paid?
Oh, yes. You got a travel warrant, yes.
Did you go by yourself or with friends?
I went by myself. But you made friends on the way, because people was going to the same barracks. Then we was up there for about 48 hours, and then we got kitted out and got on another train. We come all the way back to Chichester in Sussex.
So why did you have to spend 2 days in Dalry?
Well, we spent that being kitted out, so we could bring all our kit with us.
Couldn't they have kitted you out down south to save the journey?
I don't know the reason why that was.
And then back to Chichester?
Yeah.
To do what?
To be trained.
The basic training?
Yeah.
How long was that for?
6 weeks.
Can you describe it?
Well, it was just the square bashing and use of arms, use of throwing grenades and all that sort of thing, you know. Shooting, rifle shooting, it was all, you know, all the different things that you have to go through. Through the gas chamber to put your mask on and off so you know the procedure if there was a gas attack.
How did you cope with the training?
Very good. Because before that, I was in the Army Cadet Force, so I knew a little bit what was going to happen.
Was there any part of it that you didn't like of the 6 weeks at Chichester?
No.
Did you enjoy it?
I just dropped into it, yes. Yes, Army life was all right.
How were you treated by those in charge?
They were pretty strict, yes. Discipline was discipline. I was told to get a haircut, and because I went and got a haircut and came back, and the sergeant major said, I told you to get a haircut. And I said, I've got a haircut, sir. And he said, don't answer back, go and get a haircut. And that's how it went on, three times like that. And in the end, he made us fall into a squad, and he marched us down there and sat in the barber's chair then, and they went over the top. A very close cut.
You must have been practically bald.
Yeah, we were, yeah. Yes, it was very close. But we never let our hair get long again.
But was there any abuse of the soldiers? Any swearing at them and ill treatment?
There was a bit, but if the NCOs were caught doing it, then they was in trouble. Yes, used to get a little bit of swearing. And, yes, the treatment was a bit harsh at times, yeah.
Was it resented?
I think so, yes, when it was laid on pretty strong. But that was the making a man of you, really.
Do you think it did?
I think it did, yes. And discipline is a great thing, yes. I must say that.
Were there any of the recruits who couldn't cope?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, yeah,
you, well, you got those that broke down and cried, yes. Oh, yes.
Because of the swearing or because they couldn't do it?
No, because they couldn't do it.
What type of things might they not be able to do?
Well, I mean, the rifle drill and the parade ground, you know, foot bashing and that sort of thing. And probably the being shouted at to be told what to do.
So what happened to them if who couldn't do it?
Well, some of them got through, and because then some of them probably got invalided out because they couldn't stand. I mean, some people did. Their nerves went.
Were there any individuals like that that you knew?
Only later on, yes. There was one or two. But I don't know what they become of them. I know they went to a hospital, you know. But no, other than that, I wouldn't know what happened to them. We didn't see them again, you know, not because we got posted from that to other units, you know.
Can you describe the circumstances of the individual to whom that happened?
Well, they just used to, you know, break down and cry. That's all I could say, really. And because they used to, you know, go for or report sick and that sort of thing. And I expect they got put on charges at the time for not doing different things. Which, as you know, it was discipline with discipline. Probably used to think, well, you know, why? You clean your buttons, and then they used to say, well, they're not clean. You know, you haven't cleaned them, and that sort of thing. I mean, some people that would really get down when he knows he's cleaned them, and they couldn't stand that.
So why did they keep saying it if they had already cleaned them?
Well, that was, I suppose, the individual NCO. I suppose you could say he was picking not only on him, he probably picked on the whole section, because in those days they used to want your section to be the top section, you know.
So you did your 6 weeks training, yeah, at Chichester.
Yep.
And you got through successfully?
Yes, yes, I got posted and went to another unit.
What was that?
Actually, it was the Pioneer Corps I went to up in Derbyshire, Buxton, I should say. Buxton in Derbyshire.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I didn't mind. I got promoted pretty quick to a Lance Corporal from there when I left the training and went up to there.
What kind of duties were you doing at Buxton?
Well, we were still carrying on training sort of thing, doing various things, you know, square bashing and out in the firing range and in the doing the gas mask treatment and all that sort of thing.
The same type of thing as Chichester?
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
So you weren't doing any pioneer work like digging or...?
No, not that time, no. We went from there, we was up there about 6 weeks, and from there we come down to, got stationed to Ascot Racecourse.
With the Pioneer Corps?
Yeah.
Was the war still on in Europe by then?
Yes, it was still on. And because in the Ascot area and Bracknell area, it was all ammunition dumps.
What were you supposed to be doing at Ascot?
Well, we used to load lorries up and for transport to the train for the ammunition to be sent out abroad.
Was it heavy work?
Oh, it was heavy work, yeah. Yeah. Each man had to do... it worked out with the... you had four on a lorry, and it used to work out about 4 tons a day. So that you had to load it onto the lorry and then unload it onto the railway trucks.
Was it all manhandled or were
there
any...
Yes, all man. No, it's all, excepting for the ramps which had rollers on, that he rolled it down into the trucks and then somebody picked it off there and, you know, stacked it. And it was all sorts of ammunition, from mortar bombs, shells, rifle ammunition, all sorts.
Presumably it could have been a very dangerous job.
It was a very dangerous job, yeah.
Were there any accidents?
No. Only at one time. And they just had a gas leak in one of the, where they used to keep the gas. But somebody did get a slight burn. It was mustard gas, I think, and he got a slight burn.
What precautions did you have to take to avoid any explosions?
Well, you didn't take... You was careful, but there wasn't. You didn't used to say, you know, I've got to lift this very careful. You just lifted it and got on with it, you know.
Could there have been an explosion?
I suppose there could have been, because it was detonators and all that sort of thing that you was throwing about. And when I say throw, you used to throw it, you know, the boxes, because that there was sort of a knack of lifting things, and on these ramps with the wheels, I mean, you just helped it along, you know, and because it, with the momentum sort of thing, you used to get it so you could stack it.
So the boxes were slammed down?
Yeah. There's all various duties. I mean, it was that. And then you had to go round the ammunition shelters, because they was on the side of the road, actually, in the Bracknell area, East Hampstead. Down at the Shear, Long Cross. It was all the different places where they had these shelters. And we used to have to clear around them. Sometimes we used to do a burn control away from it, so that if there was any fires, you know, the fire wouldn't reach the shelters.
What is a burn control?
Well, you used to have a flamethrower thing, it was, and they used to burn all the dry grass away from it.
Round the ammunition
dump? Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Who supervises this kind of work?
Well, the NCOs. And because you always had a fire hydrant thing there.
Did the war end whilst you were doing this work in Europe?
Yes, in 40.
May 1945.
Oh, well, yeah, that's right, then, yeah. 45, yeah. But we carried on clearing the ammunition dumps after that. But then I left that and I went to German prisoner of war camp.
Whereabouts was that?
That was in Aldershot.
As a guard?
A guard, yes. But I used to... that time, then I was a sergeant, and I used to escort various prisoners to various camps in the country.
Was it a big camp?
All the camps were pretty big, yes, yeah, yeah. Yes, it was quite. We used to have working parties. Working from the camp, going out to do jobs at the various army depots. But my main job was escorting prisoners out of the collecting centre, and I used to escort them back up Warsaw, which I think there was an SS camp there. Used to take those sort of people to that camp. And then when the Nuremberg trials started, I used to escort prisoners to Colchester then to go back to the trial. But the military police used to take them on from there. But the others, when they started sending them back, I used to go to all sorts of camps to take them back when they'd been repacked back to Germany, because the tradesmen went first, the miners and the police and the builders and those sort of things.
They were repatriated to Germany first?
Yes, but some, because some of them didn't want to go back because they were going to the east part of Germany. Some of them did stay here.
Did they say that to you?
Yeah, they didn't want to go back, yeah. Mm. When they knew the Russians were in charge. Which they didn't go.
Did any of the prisoners that you escorted cause you any trouble?
No, you used to get to one or two just saying... you wait until the next time. It won't be so easy. Because they were the, you know, real hardcore.
Did you make any suitable reply?
No, no, no.
Did you think there was going to be a next time?
No, I don't. No, I didn't think there would be.
Did any of them try to escape?
No, no, none of them escaped as such. We had a few used to, until we found out, used to get out of the camp and go round into Aldershot and meet the girls and then come back through the wire, which they could have escaped, but they didn't.
Were they breaking rules to do
that? Oh, yeah, they were breaking rules, yeah. Yeah. Oh, those what got caught got punished, you know, they got different extra duties to do, yes. And they was treated pretty well. I mean, they had more or less the same food as what we had. The only thing that they didn't used to get was English cigarettes. They used to have a special cigarette sort of thing made up for them. They weren't a very nice cigarette, but they did have, you know, get hold of English cigarettes because they used to be pretty good at making things. They used to get old sacks and strip them and dye them and make slippers and things like that. They, you know, they used to sell these to people. There's bulbs, electric light bulbs, which there's some there. I don't know if you can see that.
Yes.
Well, they used to make
an electric light bulb
with a little village in it. Yeah, yeah. And they used to do things like that, or sauce bottles, all that sort of thing. And because they used to get hold of these bottles by and bulbs at the places they was working for the army. In stores and things, you know. They used to do a bit of tea leafing.
Did they have any grievances which they expressed to you?
No, no, no. I think they were just lucky that, you know, they'd been taken prisoner.
Did you like them or dislike them?
Well, all those I come in contact, yes, excepting for those that used to spit on the ground, you know, and say, wait until the next time, yeah.
How many of them did that?
Oh, there's quite a few, yeah. I mean, you could count them on one hand, but...
But the majority didn't do that.
No, no, no. They was quite happy.
Did you make any friends amongst them?
Yes, I, 'cause being an NCO at that time, and being in a prisoner of war camp, we used to have a batman. Used to clean our rooms and make our beds and that sort of thing.
What was he called?
I can't think of his name, what we used to call him.
But he was a German POW.
Oh, yes, he was a German POW. A very tall man he was. He was about 6 foot. And because sometimes we used to do searches to see if we could find any English money or English cigarettes and things like that. But on the day I took in to the camp to go back, he was waving an envelope